right, I'm Bubba. I'm back to do some interviewing. I've got Dr. Mark Merrick from The Ohio State University. He just gave an excellent talk about the end of the ice age, an examination of the hype evidence and underlying physiology of acute injury management. We were talking on the way over. One of the things I was happy to hear him discuss was kind of what is evidence-based, how we utilize evidence-based or utilize evidence-based, and kind of what that means. And what we were discussing on the way in is many people will tell you, well, contrast bath is our example, doesn't work. Where's the evidence to show that it helps? Well, you said the thing, what are we trying to accomplish? What's our goal? But also, sometimes we got to, you know, forego the evidence for time. And if we don't have time, if I don't have time to work with you, it doesn't matter what we're doing, you're not going to get better. In that time, we need you to get better.
Yeah, one of the things we talked about in the talk that I think that is a pervasive myth about evidence-based practice is the myth that there's not sufficient evidence to show benefit of this treatment, so I shouldn't use it. And that's misguided, and that's not really what evidence-based tells us. They tell us that a lack of evidence of an effect is not the same as evidence of a lack of effect. When there's insufficient evidence, it means that it hasn't been adequately studied with trials of sufficient quality asking a specific question to come up with a conclusive answer. All it means is that we don't really know and we need more information to find out. But unfortunately, people misinterpret that as if there's not strong evidence, therefore I shouldn't use it.
Therefore there's no evidence. Yeah.
Right. In fact, if you follow that approach, we'll never, ever do anything new. Because right. Anytime I try something new, there's no evidence to support it.
Yeah, the Tommy John would have never been invented.
Nothing would have ever been invented if we used that approach.
Right. Because you talked about evidence of benefit, evidence of no benefit, insufficient evidence of benefit, and evidence of harm. And that's to me, the evidence of harm was a good one. Because I don't think we look at that enough, probably. You know, is what we're doing causing harm, you know?
Yeah, you know, some of the treatments that we do, that we have done forever because we've done them forever, aren't necessarily good ideas. And, you know, this talk was about cryotherapy, but the overriding principle really was, do we want to mess with inflammation? And in this talk, we dissected that a little bit further, and we parsed out the early neutrophil response from the later macrophage response in inflammation. And the take-home message was, don't mess with the macrophage. The macrophage cleans up the mess and organizes the repair. And if you do anything that suppresses that, like using anti-inflammatory drugs and corticosteroids or even ice, when you're in the macrophage portion of the repair process, you're actually going to slow it down and impede it. So for those, you're actually causing harm. You may manage pain a little bit, but from a repair standpoint, you're actually causing harm if you continue to use those treatments into that phase of the repair cycle.
I think in an oversimplification of saying this, that's part of the reason why I think physicians, you get an injection. We're not doing anything strenuous with this body part for several days because we've, in essence, set you up to fail if we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times when we're using, and I want to be careful about injection. Usually when we say we're giving you an injection, we're talking about injecting you with a corticosteroid.
Right.
Or we're trying to suppress your inflammation. And it's really palliative care. It is an attempt at managing your symptoms to make them tolerable for you.
Right. It's not so you can play tomorrow.
In the old days, oh gosh, no.
Yeah.
In fact, if we're shooting somebody up and letting you play, that's malpractice.
Right.
But, you know, the goal here is really to manage your symptoms enough that you can live with it and then let us reboot and restart the whole process. But it absolutely does impede the repair process.
And I agree with you 100% when you talk about rest. You know, there's a difference in nothing versus something, and let's make that something be worthwhile. You know, I call it relative rest.
Mm-hmm.
There's the couch, as you've said, and there's – yeah, I agree with you. I might have called it treatment, but there's treatment versus rehab. Treatment is take the ice bag, go home, I'll see you tomorrow at best, versus let's get started with things that are going to help you get better.
Or treatment is you come in and we do ultrasound every day before practice because we do ultrasound every day before practice.
Right.
The idea of rehab is that you have a starting point, you have an end point, you have steps along the way, you have goals that are those steps, and you have an approach to achieving each of those goals. And when you achieve it, you quit doing that and you move on to the next goal. And if we're not doing that, we're missing the whole point. And certainly the rest in rice is poorly named. And I realize it's an older term. And people hear rest and they think go sit on the couch and eat bonbons and watch Netflix.
Right.
We think of it as relative rest as professionals, that it means no uncontrolled activity that could cause you further harm, but it doesn't mean do nothing. It means let's come in and let's work on specific goals that are appropriate at this point in your progression.
Right. We're both old. So when I was up and coming, it was Price.
Yes.
So it was Protect, which was the cast idea. Mm-hmm. You know, the rest, ice, compression, elevation. I think they all still have a place. We're protecting. We're not letting you go participate.
Right.
Or we're putting you in a boot to help it calm down for a little while. You know, however you want to look mm-hmm. at that. The rest, yeah, again, we're not letting you play. Or we're protecting you. We could say we're protecting you from yourself from those first two. You know, we're using the ice. Maybe the old, you know, 48 to 72 hours we're seeing is somewhat not what the research is bearing out on that use of ice. But, it's not for weeks and weeks and weeks. You know, compression, you show that it does have a benefit, and we're going to talk about that in a second. And then the elevation, which is basically, you know. So
yeah, the thing we have to keep in mind, and I have no interest whatsoever in coming up with a new acronym, because I think that's just a waste of time and effort. But we have to understand that what are our goals early in somebody's acute care? First and foremost, it's to protect you from harming yourself further. And inflammation does that reasonably well
by itself. It's the body's own splint.
Yeah, yes. It is your body's own splint, and it's your body's own punishment system if you choose to violate what it's telling you to
exactly.
do.
Exactly.
But, you know, from a rehabilitative standpoint, our early goal is limit the harm and start working to restore function, and the rest is going to take care of itself. You know, we can do, and I don't want to give the wrong impression with the title of this talk. I'm not advocating for no cryotherapy at any time.
No, you didn't in
no,
the talk.
No, I did not in the talk, but I want to make sure we're clear of that on this broadcast as well. But the evidence suggests that you have a small window of opportunity, and it's mostly during the neutrophilia stage, the earliest stage following the injury, when you have a response that is larger in magnitude than you actually need. And beyond that, once you get out, and this isn't clearly defined, but somewhere 5-6 hours, you're probably about at the end of your window, and you need to move on. But as you work through the rest of what you're doing, your goals are really about restoring function. And the beautiful part is that your body uses the mechanical signals from the stresses you're causing in rehab to guide the repair and the remodeling of the tissue that you're making, which is why it's so important to have done rehab versus, you know, we all ask, did you do rehab when you had this injury before?
Right.
Well, we ask that question because if you didn't, I know it was a pretty weak repair and it wasn't specifically adapted to your needs. That tells me you're more likely to have done it again.
Okay.
This isn't new. It's
right.
old, but it's like new all over
we
again.
We got a new set of glasses to
there
look at
go.
It with.
There you go, a new set of glasses.
So, okay, so let's, and I'm not going to bring my talk up because I want to talk about my ACL rehab, but let's take ACL rehab for a second. So, you know, you're the patient, and we're saying, okay, it's time for you to start jogging, okay? Well, we know that probably for a few days as we start this, depending on how we progress, you may swell
mm-hmm.
once you jog. Now, I don't think, okay, now we're, to arbitrarily throw out a set of weeks, we're 14 weeks out from surgery, let's just say, and we're jogging.
Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody was saying, well, the evidence says ice doesn't work. Well, in essence, this is kind of a new injury. In a way, is it not? How would that play in there? That's what I'm getting at.
That's a great question, and I'm glad you asked it. One of the things that happens during that whole inflammatory repair and remodeling process is you have some sentry leukocytes that are out there whose job, they're called delayed hypersensitivity cells, their job is to monitor for further stress beyond mm-hmm. tolerance and to quickly reinitiate the inflammatory process if you get there. And when you introduce something new that's relatively aggressive, like jogging for the first time, you're going to be beyond what your body is used to being able to manage, and you're going to trigger a new inflammatory process.
Right.
And when you're in there, it's not really a new injury, but it's a re-triggering of a phase of the inflammatory process that you weren't after. So
I guess it'd
yes,
be like a flash up of a fire in a house.
Yeah,
you got it
precisely.
Down, but boom, here
precisely.
It comes again.
Yeah. It's a very good analogy. And, you know, in that situation, some cold right after those activities makes absolute sense. And you don't have to listen to me to figure that out. If you've ever worked with that patient, you know that they're going to swell right up.
Sure.
And when they do, they're going to lose some range of motion. They're going to have inhibition and strength losses, and you just had a setback.
Right.
And we can ameliorate, we can minimize that setback if we use a little cryotherapy right after that stressful exercise. But we're not talking about full-blown cryotherapy for the next 5 days continuously.
Right.
Here. We're talking about short-term right. with a specific goal.
But I think, and you brought it up in your talk on some of the books, e-books, that they would say, well, you shouldn't use ice. It's not, it's not worth it.
Yeah, that's
well,
a really
okay.
oversimplified approach.
Right.
And they argue that anything natural is healthy and beneficial.
Well, and you and shot that down.
And that's just not true.
Right.
If it was, we wouldn't need healthcare providers because your body would fix all of its problems by itself
right.
and we wouldn't have to tinker with them.
Yeah. You wouldn't need an EpiPen.
You wouldn't need an EpiPen.
Yeah.
You wouldn't
insulin,
need...
Insulin, inhaler,
yeah.
whatever it is. Yeah.
Exactly right. The reality is not every physiologic process is beneficial to you. And sometimes you get processes that are positive feedback processes that start and run their course and they don't bother to stop and measure were they helping or not.
Right. I know when this topic first came up for me about 3 years ago when it was gaining traction and people were talking about it, and you referenced the newspaper article in your talk. It was Washington Post?
The Washington Post. That was just a week or two ago.
Yeah, I read that thinking, okay, am I missing something here on the stuff I've looked at? And what I could never find, and I would tell my coworkers, nobody shows me that say ice is bad and I don't use it. Well, how do you handle an acute injury? We don't ice them. Well, that doesn't tell me anything. You take my ankle sprain, what are you going to do with it? And so coming over here, we discussed that too. You know, ice for the first 6 hours or so after the injury, we start motioning. We're protecting you by not trying to say, hey, go jog, but we're going to put proper loads on you to help healing and go. So if you will go ahead and kind of expand on that a little bit.
Sure. And the thing that when we talk about this with people, and I got it coming out of the meeting room today, somebody said, well, when I take the ice away, what do I replace it with? Well, nothing. There's nothing. You don't have to
right.
replace the ice. All you do is take the ice away at this time, but continue the other things you're doing. And that involves a thorough examination and understanding what are the patient's limitations. They have strength limitations. They have range of motion. They have agility. They have proprioception. They have motor control. All these things are affected.
Mm-hmm.
You work on those in a hierarchical order. So we're going to start out with, okay, your range of motion is bad. We're going to start with range of motion. And if you're not able to weight bear, then we're doing active range of motion in an open chain.
Right.
You can do that? Great. Let's add a little closed chain weight bearing to that and see how you tolerate it. When I can do that, then I can start working on my gait and trying to normalize the gait. It's no different than any other progression you would ever do. And that's the whole point of rehab is have a goal, achieve that goal, and then move on to the next goal.
Right.
And ice is a tool to use for a specific goal of limiting the secondary injury portion in the first few hours after trauma. It doesn't help you with any of the other goals later on, with the exception, again, of flare-ups of inflammation because we overdid it today.
Right.
By the way, if you're doing it right, you're always flirting with that line with,
sure.
of I'm overdoing
but
it or not.
In theory, I should put you out there to jog and you're sore today but okay tomorrow. And not,
yeah.
ooh, still swollen tomorrow. Now, yeah, okay, now we've overdone
sure.
it. Sure. That's our line. You know,
and
now we know.
You know what? We talk about the art and science of rehab, and a lot of that's the art.
Right.
That's knowing my patient, reading the cues, and knowing how far can I push today. And that's, I think, the greatest benefit of an experienced provider is they have more experience.
Right.
And we talked about in evidence-based practice, there's three legs on that table. One is the evidence. One is clinician expertise, and that's where that comes into play. And the other is the patient's goals. Am I pushing this patient because of what I think they need, or have I stopped to take the time to listen what they think they need?
Right.
And what their goals and aspirations are. And those all have to be part of your approach to evidence-based
right.
care.
Right. And you said something interesting. They said, if I take away the ice, what do I replace it with? And I think my argument rebuttal back would be, well, if you take away their crutches, do you give them something else?
Yeah,
you know,
maybe so.
I mean, do you, when you take them out of the boot, do you put them back in another thing? You don't have
yeah.
to.
When
That's
I,
the
when
idea
I do this, I don't
to do
change,
away with these things.
I don't change anything that I used to do other than I just stop the ice at a certain point.
Right.
I'm still working on all those other goals
right.
early on that I have
right.
in my care.
Yeah. I kick my kid out of the house because it's time for them to go live on their own. You know, at that point, I don't go get another kid.
No.
You know, we want to.
And I don't
we
go find them another parent either.
Exactly. Exactly. You want to be off crutches. You want to be out of the boot or you want to be out of the cast or whatever it is. We don't want to give you something else. The thing we want to give you is the next progression to get better.
Absolutely. And I think I tell my students all the time is when you've achieved a goal, celebrate, throw it away, and go to the next goal. Don't keep treating a goal you've already achieved.
Right. Right.
We're really bad at that. We don't know when to stop using a part of our treatment protocol.
Yeah, well, like the old joke, they've reached bedrock and they're still digging. You
yes,
know, I mean,
exactly right.
So, yeah. Anything else you'd like to add?
Just that use your brain when you treat people. Don't be dogmatic in your approach. Be patient-specific. Look at their goals and their needs. Use the evidence to help guide you. But don't use cookbooks and don't use one-size-fits-all approach
to care.
It just doesn't work.
All right. That's a wrap.